You're listening to the Own the Build podcast, where each week, Liam Curley and Paul Hemming from C-Link discuss how small and medium-sized developers can level up their business through smart construction management. So, you mentioned that you want to speak about program negotiations today. Why?
Because I'm a QS and I'm a sad QS and these things bother me. I see so much procurement and so often everyone is very focused on money, focused on budget, focused on getting the contract value, right? Which obviously makes a lot of sense, but not focusing enough, in my opinion, on getting the program right, negotiating the program and realizing that in exactly the same way you can negotiate discounts and so on at the early stage of procurement, tendering, you can do exactly the same with the program, which is going to save you in 10 weeks time, 50 weeks time, however long it is. So, and also, not only am I a sad QS, but the conversations that we had with Jason Farnell a few episodes back where we talked about carrot or stick, I thought it was actually a really interesting point and it got me thinking about it. And I've had a few conversations with our clients since about incentivizing rather than hitting contractors, consultants, whoever with a stick if on failures. And that got me thinking about program negotiations and how things could be different, which is why I want to touch on your experience later, really, about how things were managed when you were a subcontractor.
Okay. So we're talking specifically about program negotiations, not programs themselves. What is program negotiations? Or what are program negotations?
Yeah, I mean, without... There's loads of different ways that you can do it, and there's pros and cons to different routes. The simplest way is to say what is the duration that you're expected to be on site. So let's do a roofing contractor, right? Seeing as perhaps we'll get onto that a bit later. So you've got your price back of £100,000 or whatever it is for roofing package. What is the program around that? What is the resource around that? Who's going to be the supervisor? Who's going to be X, Y, and Z? Who's going to be on site? Number of operatives, etc. So the simplest way is to say 10 weeks is what it's going to take. But there are loads of other benefits in drilling down a little bit deeper in terms of preceding trade. So for a roofer, what's coming first is the structure, is the scaffold. I guess there's lots of different things that would come. And you as the buyer, as the developer or main contractor in this case, have the opportunity to smooth out and prevent future issues by discussing and negotiating the program. I'm not saying anything that is news here. What I'm saying is a lot of people don't focus on it. And if you do that, you can A, find out what is needed to get the contractor to maximize their efficiency. So I could be saying to you, what is the perfect situation for you on site? What prevents you? How can I work through that? How can I prevent that? At what point can you start? So that A, you facilitate a more productive site for them. B, you engage those prior to them to progress more quickly. Perhaps in their contracts, you give the brickie or the scaffolder, in this case, a bit more understanding of what their key dates are so that it helps those that follow and just helps progress things better. And then if they fail, the roofing contractor, you know that either it was a failure of those that followed before them, those that came before them, sorry, or there isn't actually a problem and they never explain it to you, and therefore you have the means to analyze things with them. So it's not dissimilar to how we discussed that architectural consultants agreement and putting thought into it, making it logical, understanding the process will benefit so much in the longer term. And that's, I guess, is the outset of what I am trying to say here for program negotiations.
Okay, so I think some of this is news, actually, for small developers, small contractors. But let's clarify something here. Are we talking about program negotiations between a principal contractor or a developer acting as a principal contractor and the subcontractors? Or are you also talking about the developer negotiating with the main contractor?
Either.
So, as a subcontractor, a small subcontractor, working on small residential projects that were probably in the value of, I don't know, between 3 and 5 million, something like that, for the
total build.
For the, yeah, And I never got, I don't remember a scenario where we were negotiating on program or where that conversation even came into play. You were always negotiating on price.
Lip service.
I don't even remember lip service. I just remember just being asked how long it's going to take or being asked for the program from my package, and that was it. So my assumption is that there's possibly more negotiation between a client and a main contractor.
Naturally, yeah, the package is bigger, there's more interfaces, there's much more going on, so yes, of course.
Right. So when should the principal contractor, let's just call them the principal contractor, and that could be a developer or a main contractor, right? When should they start negotiating on program during the tender process?
Right from the outset. I mean, it's more than likely on a project where you're negotiating a main contract, it's more than likely that the conversation about the program is going to be quite detailed from the outset. And the question really for a main contractor, and it depends again with procurement route, design, build, traditional, whatever, which procurement route you're on will dictate program. But there's always going to be stuff that precedes you. If you're the main contractor, there is stuff that precedes you. And if you're the developer, there is stuff that is in your responsibility that you need to arrange and organize and coordinate so that the main contractor is successful. Both the main contractor and the developer in this case, and in any case, right, when they're talking at tender stage, both want a successful project, right? Both realize that there is elements of work that they have to do. By debating the program, by discussing the program in detail, both parties have a greater understanding of the expectations and requirements of one another, have a greater understanding of the key milestones, and have a greater understanding of what they need to do to ensure that certain things happen. So this, again, this is quite simple stuff when you think about it. You think, practically speaking, I need to understand the full detail of the program. I need to understand all of these different components. That is one major part of it. How you put that into the contract is up for debate, and perhaps that conversation doesn't necessarily need to happen right here, because you can put into the contract just a duration, which there's an argument to say that's better for the contractor, there's an argument to say that's better for the developer, or you could put in a detailed program which says you're going to do X here, X here, X here, X here, like, and in full detail. If I was the developer...
Like a Gantt chart.
Exactly, yeah, I mean, in simple terms, yeah, a Gantt chart. I mean, if I was the developer, given that more onus is on the main contractor than is on me, I mean, I'm aware I have to coordinate the design team and hand them over, or I have to have certain things ready to get the main contractor up and running. But as the developer, I'd be more interested to know, as the person procuring, what is your sequence? Because it's like we said last week, you don't want to get to 14 weeks into the project and think, are we late or are we not? It feels like we're late, but I'm not sure that we're late. So understanding that sequence is absolutely paramount, so that you can understand where you are and your trajectory, if you need to accelerate, if you don't need to accelerate, lots of simple things. Many might be more hesitant to go into that detail. In the same way, I imagine, as a roofer, you were probably a little less hesitant to say, look, we're going to do first fix in week one, then we're going to do this, then we're going to do this, then we're going to do this. Because if you didn't quite deliver on that, as happens, right? Look, I'm not suggesting that everything runs perfectly, but because if you didn't deliver on that, someone could say to you, you haven't done what you said you were going to do. You're meant to be doing the guttering or the copings or whatever it was, right, in this week. Why aren't you doing them? They're not even on site. You're late. So for the contractor, there's less desire to do that. But by the same token, as a contractor, you can push back and give onus to all the things that you need to happen beforehand. So do you see what I mean? So it doesn't really matter how you do it.
Yeah, let's take a step back, though. Let's talk more about, rather than how, so rather than the specifics of how detailed the program is, contractor has given you their program. What are you negotiating on? How are you approaching that?
Okay, so the contractor has given me their program. I am not tendering with just one contractor, so I've actually got three programs. I'm going to analyze the three programs of the three contractors that have tendered. you'd imagine that they're all going to be in the same order of magnitude, right? If one stands out at 70 weeks versus 50 weeks and the others are all in that ballpark, then you instantly think perhaps there's an anomaly there, in the same way you would with the value, right? If someone was at 2 million and everyone else at 1.5, you'd think the same. So you've got the three that you're analysing. You're discussing all three with the contractors. You're starting to understand, okay, the big critical issue here or the main chunk of work is the groundwork. That's going to take 3 months. And everyone seems to agree that that's where the risk is. Everyone seems to understand that. But through those negotiations and discussions, you're actually starting to understand, hang on a minute, I don't think the roofing is going to take 6 weeks with the contractor that I actually want to give the job to, because the other two are saying 4 weeks and they're actually staggering it against the scaffold or whatever. When I'm talking about program negotiations, it's not in isolation. You're learning and understanding more about your project by discussing it with people that you're tendering with in exactly the same way that you're very interested and very happy to discuss about the overall price. And that's the important distinction and clarification I'm trying to make here, is that focus on your program, get it right in exactly the same way you're doing with the price. Programs often then lead to claims in some way. If things are late, whether it's your fault or the other party's fault, people are always going to say, what was the program? What was the expectation? What was the benchmark? And so if it is late, you're going to suffer the consequences of not having gone into it, and it's going to extend your contract some anyway, increase it if you don't get it right. So it's important to get it right in exactly the same way it's important to get the contract some right.
I wanted to take a quick break from the show to share a message from our sponsor, Seelink. Seelink is software designed to streamline the process of subcontract procurement. It's a platform that helps SME developers and main contractors stay agile whilst replicating the commercial scale and savvy of large contractors. If you want to save a guaranteed minimum 5% against budget construction costs on your next project, head to www.get.c-link.com/podcast to find out more. If you're driving or working out right now and didn't catch that URL, don't sweat it. We've included the link in the description box for this episode. Now, let's get back to the show. What I want to know is, they come back, the contractors, with their price and with their programs. Programs are different. So we've got to a point, we understand your program, and we understand there's differences in the program. The prices vary a little bit. So how are you going to approach the contractor, and what does a negotiation look like on program once you've understood?
I'm not advocating here that you say to the expert, forget your program, that I think is done in 50 weeks, I think you should do it in 40 weeks. That's not what I'm saying, but now we're at a point where we understand the program. Now it's about incentivizing the program, which is exactly what we were speaking last week with Jason Farnell about, or a few weeks ago. And this is where I think, so we've done the exercise of we understand the program, and now we're at the point where we want to say carrot or stick. The typical approach has always been, let's put liquidated and LA and ascertained damages into the contract, LADs. Let's say it's going to cost me £5,000 a week if I don't finish this on time. So if you don't finish on time, every week you're late £5,000 a week. Comes a bit of a nightmare to manage for anyone who's been involved in extension of time claims. There's no real winner from the whole process. And at the end of the day, you're just recovering costs. And what we were talking about with Jason in the context of consultant agreements really resonated with me. And I was actually speaking to a developer who I know quite well, and I was just asking them, have you ever offered bonuses, anything like that to incentivize? And they were saying, oh, it doesn't really, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. We try to be quite open-minded to it, but we often find that there's times when at the very outset you think it works, but then over the course of a year you potentially lose energy. By the time you're 3 months in and you're late, there's no hope of us ever hitting that. So we're kind of back to square one. What I was discussing with that chap, he's really, really interesting approach to how he manages things, was how could you approach it differently, sticking with the main contract example. So the main contractor, let's say it's a 10 flats with a basement or something like that, you could chop it into milestones. And what you could say is, like, basement waterproofing, if you hit that by this date, you've said you're going to hit it after 12 weeks. If you hit it at 10 weeks, you get a bonus of X. Then you go from basement waterproofing to shell and core, so you've got the frame up. Let's say that you're saying that'll be 24 weeks. If you hit that by 20 weeks, you'll get another bonus there, so on and so forth. And the reason why it's interesting to incentivize, and this is what I wanted to ask you about with your experience as a roofing contractor, you were probably running multiple contracts at any time, a couple of projects at a time, I'm not sure, but I'm assuming none of them incentivized you to do it.
No.
Beyond there's LADs, or I'm going to give you a hard time, or there's, it's more, I'm going to erode your profit, then I'm going to make you more profit, is yeah. the approach which we as an industry have taken, right? And
yeah, you very rarely got much love. I mean,
yeah, it's not what happens, is it?
Heavy-handed, it would be threats or veiled threats throughout. If you weren't performing, if something went wrong, then the threat of LADs were always over your head. I was wondering whether if you incentivize people to speed up their work, are you potentially increasing the possibility that the quality is going to suffer?
There's definitely that which has to be considered and has to be managed. I mean,
does it need to be tied to the defects liability period as well? Because
liability period will be in the contract regardless.
I know you have retention and it'll be in the contract. But the reason I raise that is, if there's incentives, or if during a tender process we've negotiated on the program, however, in whatever way, whether you give me discounts or I've increased my price or whatever, and so I get it done quicker, and as a result, it isn't as good as it should be, but my goal was just get in, get out, get it signed off.
Yeah, there's definitely that as a challenge, but this is always the competing argument, isn't it? My feeling is that regardless, you've got to have a quality system in place of some sort on a project. You've got to have a handover system of some regard in place. So what you're actually saying is that you can have that bonus, but it's not when it's finished on site. It's when your QA is signed off and handed over for that. And when you do basement waterproofing, going back to that, you're going to have to get the basement waterproofing signed off. It's going to have to be warranted. So that's your point where the bonus happens. And it's not...
Yeah, but you can get those things signed off. So we're probably diverting, right? But roofing is a good example, right? Because there are a lot of roofing systems, if you're talking about flat roofing as opposed to pitch. Flat roofing systems, there are dozens on the market, and the quality of the manufacturer approval system varies dramatically. And so you can speed up things and get things signed off for certain manufacturers and not others, because they're just, their QA is just not very good. But that's probably going on.
By the by, right? If you're choosing that product, you're going to have the same issue however you manage it. You've got to manage quality, right? You've got to have a system in place where quality is managed, and that's with the incentive or without the incentive. And if you're managing quality, I think you make a really good point. I don't want to, like, you're giving them the carrot and saying rush, that's not necessarily the greatest thing to do. But if you're giving them the carrot and saying it has to be delivered in exactly this fashion, again, a bit more forethought, this is the quality that we're, this is the handover process for that. Once we have that, if you do that within X weeks, you will get a bonus. I can't see a reason why you wouldn't do that if you are appropriately managing it.
LADs, I mean, LADs, do you have to have it, LADs, as a principal contractor?
You don't. I mean, LADs originally came off with more commercially minded projects in mind, right? So if you're building a Tesco's and you're meant to finish it on the 31st of December and they're expecting £50,000 of revenue on the 1st of January, it's very simple in a very calculated way to say the LADs are £50,000 because that's what we're going to lose for every day that we miss out. They have been treated in a slightly different way, and people kind of just use them in a lot of cases incorrectly. So a main contractor might give a roofing contractor exactly the same LADs that they have when it should be a portion of it or whatever. But LADs do work. It's a deterrent, isn't it? But what I'm advocating for here is incentivizing in flipping it, Liam, as you always like to do, and changing the mentality to chase more profit, or I'm offering you more profit to give me priority. So going back to your roofing contractor scenario, you've got two projects running and you've got 10 fixers, right? You've got 10 roofers. Both have five. Two roofers call up sick on Monday. You've now got eight. One project says if you finish this week, you're going to get paid an extra £1,000. One doesn't. Which project gets the resource? Which project is always prioritised? Which project gets the best resource? It's those things. And that's not, you're not going to say to your guys, do everything you can, forget quality, let's go after it, because it's going to bring problems down the line, etc. But you're going to say, you know what, rather than putting four guys on one and four guys on the other, I'm going to leave the five on that project, and that project's going to suffer and get three, because it's in my interest as a business commercially to make that decision. It's going to be more profitable for me. And what I'm saying is, to kind of bring everything wrapped up, focus on your program, negotiate the and understand the program with those that are tendering. Once you have that information, you should know what you actually think it takes to get it done. You're not blind. Then at that point, when you're busy at the same time negotiating a discount, you'll be in a point that almost everyone will do it. At the point of the end of a tender, they say, I need a discount to get this over the line. Someone will offer 2%, 3%, whatever, right? Let's say it's £1 million contract and keep it simple. And someone says, I need a 3% discount and the job is yours. They give you that 3% discount. And you then say, actually, you can have that back if you hit this deadline on the basement waterproofing, I'm going to give you £10,000. If you hit this deadline on weather tightening the building, I'll give you another £10,000. And if you hit the overall deadline, I'll give you a further £10,000. Or break it up however you want to do it. You can make it much more, you can make it 5, 5 and 20, right? But you're not actually losing anything through doing that. The project is massively gaining and you're getting it within budget, and you're getting it on time, which is the most important thing. Whereas most people say, I'll take the 970,000, not really sure what's going on with the program, hopefully it's going to work out okay, I don't really understand it, and if it doesn't, I'll just screw over the contractor anyway and take 10k off them each week on LADs. And as we've said before, it's not the spot anyone wants to be in. You want to be in the spot where you're shaking hands with someone saying, amazing job done, exactly as we planned, and there's that extra money for a job well done.
Yeah. So we're not necessarily talking about program negotiations as such. We're talking about incentivization and program management, I guess.
Clarity.
Yeah, because yeah. I think, yeah, just wrapping this up, if you like. And I can only speak for relatively smaller projects. But I very rarely got asked about program, other than what's your program. You would have it in the tender return, you know, 3 weeks to do this, 1 week to do that. I mean, I was a roofing contractor, so you know, £100,000 roofing package is not a long time.
Yeah, and it's not as high risk as the main contract example we've been taking, but regardless of what it is.
But if you're doing that with every subcontractor, then you're kind of leaving it all in their hands. And I remember when I was early into in contracting, I wasn't putting in my tender return what my program was, and I wasn't receiving any questions about the program. And I suspect that's pretty common amongst small developers too.
It definitely is. And I firsthand see that many times over on a lot of the tenders that we see through C-Link, that it's still, even though we're encouraging it, it's still, people are worried about the money for very good reason, but not realizing that the program is very much tied up with the money, and you need to focus on it.
So No more LEDs. Carrots only. It's going to be like Peter Rabbit.
Yeah, all QSs are going to think, I'm a lunatic. But yeah, get rid of LEDs or keep them as your final backup, but incentivize and get people focused on doing your job rather than the job down the road.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Paul. See you next time.
Cheers, Liam. See you next time.